5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
First show of 2024. I had to look that up. It is the new Panic Room episode 333 on the 11th of January 2024. A whole brand new year, which is I'm excited. It's still fresh, it's still nice, and nobody's really ruined it yet for me, but hey, there's always time for that. But anyway, I haven't spoken to her since last year, I suppose, technically speaking. I'm going to bring her on. What with the yee-haw, Happy New Year and all that. As I was saying there, you know, I still have that childlike wonderment of a whole new year, and it's all nice, and it's still shiny new. It's like, you know, like a new toy you got out of the box. I mean, give it another few weeks, and somebody will have dumped all over it. But I'm trying to be, you know, to approach things a little bit different this year. I actually came across, I'm going to read a great sort of meme-y, one of these motivational things. It's got to be my mantra for this year, because I'm one of these people that I don't let go too easily. If somebody pisses me off or somebody does me wrong, yeah, I can hold a grudge. I still bear grudges against people who fucked me off back in middle school. Yeah, so this is me. This is where I come from. But this great quote, and I'm going to read it. Maturity is learning to walk away from people and situations that threaten your peace of mind, self-respect, values, morals, or self-worth. That's pretty much everybody that I've come across in the past few years, you know. So, I'm trying to do that. And just been a couple of occasions, a couple of people, you know, again, even this. We sort of hung over from last year, you know, and I'm going to do this, and then taking a deep breath and thinking, okay, I can send them a snotty email and it'll make me feel a bit better, but what's it going to achieve? You know, and I'm trying to do it, because I'm very, well, you've worked with me, you've been the longest person to work with me ever. Literally, in my entire life, nobody has stuck with me professionally longer than you have. So they.
That's so sweet.
There'll be a brass plaque up somewhere to your tenacity. But, you know, I think it is. And I know I'm not easy, but you know, I'm a sweetheart, really, but. Yeah, and I'm just learning. To, maybe as I'm getting older a little bit, or whatever. I'm dealing with a lot of life is happening, and with business and all the rest of it. You know, learning to just let go a little bit and just deep breath.
Great.
And think, well, okay, I can react. I can fight back. But what good is it going to do? I mean, if the answer is I'm going to achieve something from this, then I'm going to come out all guns blazing. So anybody.
Right.
Anybody out there in radio land, beware. you know, but it is. It's one of those things that, again, Happy New Year, everybody, and all the rest of it. And let's see how long this new shiny. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a hell of a year this year. I mean, I was just reading before we came on the air. Britain and the US have just launched attacks on... Houthi terrorists in Yemen, the Iran based, which means it's going to piss Iran off, and obviously Ukraine's going on, and Russia's Israel's still going on. I mean, yeah, exactly. Why can't people get along? You know, you're right. You hit the nail on the head there. You know, just get
on. We're all on this world together. I mean, there's that. You know, well, I do find it weird. You know,
but you get a lot of wars. I mean, the one in Israel at the moment, in case in point, a lot of the wars, and I'm probably going to offend a bunch of people here and couldn't care less, to be honest with you, but because everyone is entitled to my opinion, that's what I would say. you know, a lot of these wars, so think about it, you know, caused by people fighting over whose imaginary god is better than the other one. My god's better than your god, so we're going to blow each other up. Well, you know, don't do that, people. Just get along. Be nice.
Yeah.
Or, you know, as we did with kids, when we were kids, you know, we'd settle these things over a game of marbles or Conkers.
Your parents would just take away your toys and sit you in different corners, and, you know, and so I think that you would sit
on the bottom step and think about what you did wrong.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I do that to the puppies all the time. So, Yeah, the dogs.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You should get the, you know, the Israelis and the Palestinians. Just, right, you sit in that corner. You sit. Yes, you think about what you've done. You think
but
about.
But they should
it.
Have to. They have to wear that get along shirt. You know, that big shirt that you put the
and then apologize. In. Make them. Yeah, the mums make them apologize. Say something sorry.
Yes.
No, say it like you mean it.
I think we have
say it like
here.
You mean it, you know, and you know, say with the Ukraine. I mean, you know, get Mr. Putin say so. Sorry, no, come on, speak up, say it like you mean it, say it like you mean it. You know, just don't just say it.
Put some phone calls in tomorrow and get this rolling.
You know, wouldn't that be great if the world leaders got their mums involved? That's what this needs.
Yes. Don't mess with mom. Don't mess with mom. Yeah.
Oh, or dads. Dads who are also moms like me.
That's true.
I've been mum and dad for, God, 8-9 years now. I wear both roles and both sets of underwear. So, but I think that's venturing into different territory now. So.
I did want to say I had a wonderful Christmas. We have not talked. Well, no, that's not true. We have not talked on air since before Christmas. I never got my Christmas song. I didn't get my Christmas song this year, which is kind of sad. And you know, you are so excited about your shiny new year, and right now I just took down my decorations, and I'm reminded every single day that it's no longer the most wonderful time of the year. So. You know,
no, it is. It is the most wonderful time here because it's the furthest part of the year away from next bloody Christmas. That's what it is. This is wonderful.
I could not wait
to get my decorations down. They were down. We got them down on the 2nd of January because my daughter helped. She went back to school on the 3rd, so we did it on the 2nd before she went back. I just wanted it down and boxed and put away, and I just wanted. Yeah, I just
I did it the I think tradition, I googled it, says the 6th, and so mine stayed up till the 6th, and even then I was sad, and it's just still not jolly.
I think there's still some up around here. There's still some, unless they're just going to leave them up till next year, you know.
You know what? If the husband would let me do that, I would do that.
You'd be one of those. You'd have your Halloween stuff up and your Christmas stuff up at the same time.
Yes, you know you can do this. You can do both. But after we got all the decorations down, he was like pirouetting in the living room because it was so big and you know so open, and he just was so giddy. And I'm in the corner crying. So. I'm gonna start with my post. You know, the countdown to Christmas and the ones that you hate.
No, don't. You know? You usually get a fuck off from me on those. You can just fuck right off with that. Because, of course, the stores are full of Valentine's stuff. As I call it, Hallmark cards, rip-off, fake holiday time.
I pulled my bucket out of the garage. I have a bucket of Halloween Valentine decorations. So I'm all with Hallmark.
Well, the beauty of doing it that way is that when you've got all your stuff out, you've got a bucket to vomit in when you've done.
You know, it's just not as it's not as festive if it's vomit.
Don't knock it. It very much depends on what you've been eating in my experience.
True. That's
if you
so
eat,
gross,
I mean, that's it. You know, if you're obviously overindulging, you're drinking till you're, I'm going to drink if I'm sick, you know, swallow a bit of glitter, you know, or some little sparkly stars so it comes up festive. I think that's, that could be a thing. And you'll probably find this time next year there'll be some idiot kids will be posting that on TikTok. It'll be the glitter vomit challenge. Yeah. And then somebody will overdo it and die, and then it'll be my fault. You know, other people's stupidity is my fault. So I think, to be fair, if you're going to eat enough glitter to kill you, really, you need to be taken out of the gene pool.
Oh, man. It's true. It's very true. But, yeah, I'll be decorating for Valentine's. Yeah, go ahead.
Not interested. Not interested. I don't care what you decorate
I know.
For. I only grudgingly put up Christmas decorations because, you know, the kids. But other than that, I just wouldn't bother. Seriously, I just wouldn't. I just, no, it's just, I know, I'm a miserable old. That was always my ambition in life, was to be a real miserable old man, and I'm working on it. And I think I'm doing really well. Doing really well.
Be the Grinch. Mm. Yeah, I think you do that well.
Exactly.
Did you watch that movie, the Violent Night? Did you watch that?
Did I
you?
I really enjoyed it. Was it David Harbour from Stranger Things was brilliant as Santa.
Yeah.
And it was hokey at all. It was, you know, sent up all the cliches. The violence was brilliant.
Loved
absolutely
it. Oh, so
thoroughly enjoyed. What a hoot. Yeah, absolutely enjoyed it. Yeah, really good.
Yeah,
I recommend. That's going to be my new Christmas movie.
Yes, definitely. It's ours too. I think we've seen it three times now, and it's only been out, two years? So
did you see, did you see Krampus? It came out a few years ago. Quite a few years ago now. With Adam Scott in it. Again, very, very, very dark. I mean, but I need to watch that again, actually. Great. Because I can't watch it now till Christmas. I'm one of these, but I can't watch Christmas shows or Christmas movies unless it's Christmas. It's funny enough, before Christmas, I went to a client that they had a pre-Christmas gathering. They had one of these, was it a white elephant gift exchange thing? And I got these this set of four Christmassy like breakfast bowls, and they're great. I love them. And the other day, I noticed one was missing because they're still out in the corner in the kitchen because they match the sort of red. They match the colour scheme in my kitchen, and I noticed one was missing, and it was in the dishwasher. And so I thought, okay, I said, who's done this? Who's used the Christmas bowl in January? Second week in January of that. It's not, and it was my daughter. She had some cereal in it. Just don't do that. We have plenty of the bowls. It is not Christmas. Do not use the Christmas bowl. Just don't. Seriously, don't do that. And it upset my whole sort of little universe. You can't know.
Wow.
No, it's like watching TV show. You know, if it comes to a Christmas episode, I have to skip it because I just can't bear to watch a Christmas episode when it's not Christmas.
Yeah, I don't have that problem. Although I did read like six Christmassy books during the holiday. And I was like trying to speed read through the last one, so it didn't go over.
Yeah, so you're not reading in January. Yeah,
yeah,
good thinking.
Yeah,
good
thinking.
So anyhow, we could talk about how much I hate Christmas all night, to be honest. Who we got on the show this evening?
I'm excited. Because this is the first show of the year. And we've been doing this for way too long, but I'm super excited because we have returning guest tonight. And I love to say that, it's their fault because they do know what they're getting themselves into when they agree to come back on the show. But I'm going to just introduce our first guest here. We have returning guest, horror author Jesse D'Angelo. Woo!
Hello.
Oh, boy. Thank you for the applause. Thank you, everyone.
You well deserved. And Merry Christmas, Jesse.
You too, Mr. Scrooge.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Can I just hear in that wonderful accent, humbug?
Bah, humbug.
There you go. I'm right there with you. I'm a minimalist this Christmas. How you guys doing? It's been a while.
It has been a while, yes.
Yeah. It's going to make me look it up and see how long it's been. But now you say you're a minimalist when it comes to decorating for Christmas. I have like six big buckets. And when I went to put away my stuff, of course I've accumulated a little bit more. Now I don't have room for everything to fit into the six buckets. I need a seventh bucket. And, there could be worse things. There could be drugs. you know. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. Yeah, my wife takes care of the decorating. And I have to apologize in advance if I sound like I'm keeping my voice down. My baby is sleeping in the other room, so I have to like try to keep my voice down.
Oh, how old is the baby?
He's 7 months.
Oh, so sweet.
So I'm trying to. He's a precious little pain in the ass.
Oh,
I love him.
This is the best time. Before they learn
it's
to
a wonderful age, yeah.
But yeah, I'll just be modulating my voice best I can. But I'm not like sleepy or anything like that.
No, that's I totally understand.
It's okay. We are. We're sleepy. I mean, I've been up since the crack of 8 a.m.
8 a.m.
Oh. Oh, you're complaining about that? I've been up since like 4 a.m.
Yes, I
you beat me. I was up at 5:30 this morning. I'm up at 5:30 every morning. So needs to be done.
Going my best sleep then. I just looked it up though, Jesse. You were here March of 2023, so it has been quite a while. So
yes, it has. Well, it's also been a while since I've put out any books. Last year, well, with having the baby, my productivity like ground to a halt. So I wound up putting out two books in 2023 only, and one was Skinner, which just came out last month. So I'm just impressed that I was able to put out anything at all. I'm just happy that I was able to do anything. Because there was a period, like the first couple months after he was born, when like I'd be lucky if I got a couple paragraphs a day written, you know.
Definitely understand that.
It's nice to kind of be back in the swing of things.
Definitely, definitely. And you are here to talk to us about your book, Skinner. We all have a beast inside. Tell us a little bit about it.
I've always loved kind of werewolves and werecats and that kind of thing. And also like James Bond, Jason Bourne kind of espionage thrillers. And I thought I'd like to combine the two and have like, you know, action-packed horror story. And child trafficking was something that was coming, into the public view more and more. And I thought, you know, I could incorporate that into the story. I could have the heroes, you know, hunting down a group of child traffickers and trying to save children. And our hero doesn't know that he has this ability inside of him, but, you know, it's unlocked, and he finally realizes that he's this Skinner, which is a skinwalker, and he turns into this Black Panther werecat and totally badass. And he and our female protagonist have to go and kick a bunch of ass, and there's monsters and sex and violence, and it's really cool. I should say that this is the special edition of this book. I put out the first edition of this book in 2021, and I felt like it needed like another pass with editing, and I also... I've always wanted to put like an art gallery into it and maybe have some other cool features to go along with it. So I thought, you know, I'm going to put out a special edition. I'm going to, you know, spend a few months and do some new art. I'm going to, you know, get a foreword by someone, a cool author. So I got Jeff Strand to write an introduction for me.
Oh, nice.
Or foreword. Mm-hmm. A foreword, I should say. And then I put a chapter from the next book into it. So it's like, you know, a special edition with, you know, some extra little goodies in there to hopefully, you know, justify releasing the same book again. But it is a product that I'm much happier with than the first release. It did a whole new cover for it. So I'm pretty excited. And as I've released this, I've finished the first draft of the next book. The sequel to Skinner. So it's going to be pretty epic. Oh, God. I don't know what I'm getting. I'm biting off a lot. Hopefully I can chew it, you know.
I have seen the cover. It's pretty awesome. And I have to say, I have not read any Shifter. I've never read any Shifter books. I think I have to change that now. Just hearing about it, I'm like, that sounds really, you know, I mean, to be honest, I follow a lot of the romance pages as well, and there are so many romance, you know, werebears and stuff, and I'm just like, oh, my goodness. But a horror Shifter would be totally different, and I think I can get down with that.
Right. Well, you know, I had to kind of do my best to distinguish this book from those, because most people would see this and think, oh, it's a Shifter book. It's erotica. And, you know, it's got some spicy stuff in it. It's got romance and it's got a couple sex scenes and whatnot, but it's not erotica. Originally, this book wasn't called Skinner. It was called Shifter. And I very naively, I didn't know about the Shifter erotica subgenre. So I thought, like, oh, I'll come up with this, you know, new character, and they'll be shapeshifters. And for short, they'll call themselves Shifters. Oh, that's really cool and original and new. And then, like, I thought, you know, maybe I should Google, you know, Shifter, or, like, go into Amazon and type in Shifter and see, is there any other book called Shifter, just to kind of check all bases. And lo and behold, there's, like, 15,000 books with Shifter in the title that all have, like, shirtless dudes with, you know, their pecs all glistening and, but like, a bear head. So I'm like, well, I can't call my book Shifter. Obviously, everyone's going to think it's that, you know.
Right.
I have to think of something else. Okay, so they're not shapeshifters. They're skinwalkers. Okay, so it's not Shifter. It's Skinner now.
Skinner.
So I just kind of just changed things around. Essentially, it's the same kind of thing. But the nice thing about this kind of thing is, like, you can really rework the lore to fit your needs, like, whether it's, you know, werewolves, vampires, whatever. You know, if you look at, like, books and movies of werewolves, vampires, other kinds of monsters, you know, the rules are always changing, you know, like, sometimes vampires, you know, are killed by stakes and crosses and all of that, and sometimes they're like, no, that doesn't bother me at all, or sometimes someone, like, kills them, sometimes it doesn't, so it's like the storyteller can kind of create their own mythology. And I thought, like, this is a good chance for me to just kind of, like, create my own little universe here and, you know, have all these different kinds of creatures and cool stuff going on. And I love monsters. What can I say? I'm a big geek. So
I think we all are geeks when it comes to horror. I definitely want to hear more. Did you have an excerpt that you're going to read for us?
I have an excerpt. You asked me to read something, and I thought about it. What would be a good thing to read? I think a good thing for me to read would be the moment where our protagonist Will first transforms. He doesn't realize he has this power, and then at a certain point in the book, it's unlocked, and he starts to transform, and he doesn't know what's going on, and he's about to find out. So,
right,
so I'll read this. All right, you ready?
Ready when you are.
Okay. So just to preface this, there's formatted in the book where he can hear his inner beast kind of talking to him, sort of like a dialogue they have back and forth, and it the beast's dialogue appears in, like, big black italic letters, so, you know, you would have to imagine it's, like, talking in a deep voice and whatever. So when I talk like that, you'll know why I'm talking like that. Okay. So here we go. Just fall back, Will. Fall back? How? Surrender? Will's mind raced. He didn't know what any of it meant, only that the time had come. He had to have faith to give his trust to whoever or whatever this thing was, to fall back, to surrender. He closed his eyes and held out his hands, finally allowing his body to relax, to shift his balance backward as if a net would catch him. He felt a strange warmth from behind, a vacuum pulling him into a warm bed to sleep. He felt a dreamlike state envelop him as he slowly began to fade out, and something else began to fade in. There was no pain. A shimmer ran across Will's face, a warping of light like a desert mirage, like heat rising from a scorching highway. Will began to warp away, and something else began to emerge into being. It was covered in short, glistening black hair. Its arms and legs were massive and muscular. Fingers glimmered away to reveal mighty claws sheathed in padded paws. A powerful, agile tail lashed out from the base of his spine. Yellow eyes flared. Powerful feline jaws warped into place. His large predatory physique flexed and stretched, balanced on two haunched legs. His clothes did not tear away, but simply disappeared along with the rest of his human form. The mirage shimmered to its conclusion, taking less than 30 seconds from start to finish. Standing on the riverbank, reflected in the ripples of the running water below, Will Shaw could no longer be mistaken for a human being. He was a massive black jaguar. Okay, there we go. I think that's the good place to stop.
I was just sitting back, waiting for more.
As you say that, you really just got started. That was good.
That's good. Well, see, he's just wanting more. Yeah, no,
well,
I gotta
tease you.
I liked it. And when you go to make up the signed autograph, the signed copy, that's XTINA.
You got it.
James always tells me how shameful I am, but
you're shameless. You
I'm
really
okay
are.
With that.
Mm.
No,
oh,
you,
I'm completely shameless. So
you said you completed the first draft. Is that what you said of the sequel?
Yep. And so I'm waiting to hear back from my editor and my beta readers, and I'm going to go in and work on the second draft, and I got to do art for that one too, and you know it's going to be a while, so that one probably won't be released until the end of this year, so probably another December release. And in the meantime, I'm putting out a sequel to my other book, which came out last year, Dying Sheep, which is my Friday the 13th kind of satire book. So that one's going to be shorter and much easier to put out, and it's not going to have a lot of art and stuff. So I should be able to just put that out, sometime in the summer, and that'll be cool. But yeah, for the Skinner stuff, going to be at least a trilogy and possibly more, depending if people want more of it. But I love it, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Now Skinner is definitely not humor at all. I mean, it's definitely horror. So
it's horror.
What do you?
It's got humor in it. I mean,
everything
I've got a good measure of humor. I can't avoid it no matter how hard I try.
Right.
But yeah, I would define it as like action horror or dark fantasy, like that kind of thing.
Now, do you have a preference of you like to write the stuff with a little more horror, or do you like to be a little more serious, or is it just whatever you're feeling at that time? Or
each project is kind of different. I mean, I've got a few that are definitely darker and more serious, and then sometimes like I've got a book that's a straight up horror comedy where it leans much more into the comedy than horror.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it really depends, but really I can't avoid putting comedy in there somewhere. Like even in my more serious books, there's always got to be like, a little moment here or there, a little comic relief, a little chuckle or a character who, says something. I can't help it. So I think it makes the drama better, because that's just life. Life isn't just dry and dour, and you know.
Definitely, I know that. I definitely think that horror needs it a little bit. I mean, I think I have read some books that just nothing, not even that. You don't even chuckle ever, and that is just. It's hard. I mean, I think that you definitely need the comic relief every so often just to untense your muscles and relax a little bit and just, you know, think everything. And that's the thing, too, is I think if you put some humor in there, your audience can kind of let their guard down a little bit and think, well, maybe maybe it's not going to be as bad. And then you hit them with something, you know, even worse. And they're like, oh, my God, I didn't see that coming. So I definitely think we need the humor in our horror.
Well, it's a lot like the old, it's a lot like a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. You know, it's like when you're writing horror or sci-fi or anything like that, you're asking your reader to suspend their disbelief. You're asking them to really go along with you and buy into something that's ridiculous, right? Whether it's monsters or time travel or whatever. So in order to try to get somebody to suspend their disbelief and go along with this ridiculous thing, you know, you got to kind of relax them a bit. you got to try to ground things, or I shouldn't say you got to, but what I like to do is try to ground things, make everything else as real and believable as possible. And that'll make the unbelievable element in your story much easier to swallow.
Yes.
So it was sort of like the best example I always use is the original Alien. You know, Ridley Scott's Alien. It's like you're expected to believe that there's this alien creature that has acid for blood, and you know that there's a robot that bleeds milk, and you know all this insane stuff. But one of the reasons that you buy into it is that the whole environment and the characters and everything is so realistic that, you know, the acting is so good that everything just feels like this could really be happening. So if you create that, you know, you can make the audience kind of swallow that pill, you know.
Definitely. I think that because if you create really, really believable characters, the audience believes it because the characters believe it. I mean, we don't have any choice. We're in the story now, and it's going on. I know I was kind of in that camp where it was hard for me to set aside, you know, I don't know if I can buy into that or something like that, until the first time I read what genre am I thinking of? Bizarro. The first time I read Bizarro, I was like, you know, it happened to be James Lawmore's book, The Erotic Odyssey of Colton Forche. And the first line in the book, I was like, well, there we are. You know, that's happening now. And so my beliefs totally went out the window, and I just was along for the ride then. But he created such rich characters that, you know, this is what we're doing. This is what's happening. And you didn't really have a choice not to believe it, because there was no excuses. There was no, you know, explaining things away. This is just what's happening. And that's a trip go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's something that I try to do with my writing, is to be kind of matter of fact about it. Not to try to explain a whole lot, not to get inside the characters' heads too much. Sometimes I don't do that at all. I just like to just tell you what's happening. Like, describe what you're seeing, what you're hearing, feeling, smelling, tasting. Just describe everything. Do it in an interesting way. Have a good tone. Have a fast pace. I don't like to get into explanations or telling too much, I should say. There's the old adage of, like, show, don't tell, you know. There's a lot of writers that will tell you, like, oh, George was feeling this way. And, and it's like, don't tell me George was feeling that way. Show me through his behavior that he's feeling that way.
We see that a lot, you know, obviously a lot of the submissions we get through it kind of spoils it for me because it's just like reading a list and it's no, you know, and it's a lot, you know, they don't get, I guess, you know, probably a lot of my early work was probably a lot like that, you know, but you have to, it's part of the craft, you know, you have to learn what is it, an alternative way of expressing, like you say, you know, George felt sad. What is an alternative way of expressing that without saying George felt sad? And there is an art to it, and it's one of those things that it takes time and practice. But, you know, when you're plowing through it, it's... I've seen some where you just get literally page upon pages blocks of telling, you know, block upon block, and just to look at. And I try to when I'm working with authors, you know, and I try to impress in them. And this is not by any means my own revelation. And I've got this from I think Stephen King's On Writing. Is it's as important how it looks on the page as to what you're reading. If you just see, and you just see block, 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 your brain starts switching off. Yeah. Whereas if it's broken up with dialogue, and I'm a great fan now of the, and again, my old English teachers at high school would be, if they're dead, obviously, turning in their graves. If they're not dead, they'll be not, but you know what I mean? The single line paragraph, the single word paragraph can be so damned effective. Mm-hmm. Just one word, a couple of words, just boom. And let your reader's mind sort of work for them, you know? But there's a lot, you know, because I also do ghostwriting and editing professionally, and, you know, a lot of writers don't get that. They just don't. And my other, again, you've got me on my soapbox now. My other one is dialogue tags, especially a dialogue tag with, you know, and he said lazily, you know, and he said, what was it, pronoun, adverbs, that's it. Are the adverbs? Yeah. Was it pronouns? Yeah. People think they have to have a dialogue tag on every line of dialogue, and that just he said she, and then they try to be inventive, and it's just like, just stop it, you know, just throw it in every now and then, so just to refresh the reader's mind who's talking, you know.
I mean, the whole dialogue tag thing, I mean, you can take it for granted, but like, that's a whole part of the art of writing, and what you said about like breaking up the paragraphs and having single word paragraph here and there. It's like, especially as an artist, I want to be able to look at the page, and the actual like shape and form of the letters themselves are like part of the experience. You want to like feel the rhythm and the flow of it. And
even space, you know, you put that space, and immediately you're changing scene. There's a gap in the atmosphere, and it eats a pause, and that sort of thing. I mean, the whole psychology. I tell authors, you know, every single part of that book is telling the story. You know, even the title.
Mm-hmm.
The title tells the story, you know, obviously the image on the cover. I mean, you're not trying to tell the whole story on the image on the cover, but you need to give that tease, that taste, that hook, you know. And every part of it, you know, the chapter headings, if you're going to have chapter headings, every little bit of it you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it's a big revelation for me, you know, writing a book. And how can I explain that it's Saturday afternoon in March, and it's this, and this is where they are. Well, put it at the top of the chapter, you know, 7th of March, 1994, London. And you don't have to go into, you're trying to be clever and, oh, they were in the shadow of Big Ben, and it was this, and it was St. Patrick's Day nearly, and all that. But don't try to be too, just say, this is where you need to set the scene. So, I mean, they do it with movies. Even the big blockbuster movies, they will do that. You know, yeah. They will just
people
walk. This is where they are, and this is, So that works for
me. Another thing I like to do is, and this is maybe a cheat, but sometimes if you don't have a good way of getting something across by like showing the character's behavior, dialogue works just fine. I don't like to tell in a scene description because then that's the narrator telling. But if you have a character in dialogue, like if you want to express that they're in London walking past Big Ben and that, all of that stuff, you could just have your character on their cell phone and in their dialogue, they could be saying like, yeah, no, I can't hear you. No, I just passed Big Ben now. Okay,
yeah.
Shut up about that. We already had this discussion. You know, you can sprinkle in the exposition through the dialogue, and it works so much better than trying to express it in your scene description of narration. So there's all these little tricks, and like with the dialogue tags, it's like, when do you say "said"? When can you get away with not using a dialogue tag at all? You know, when do you want to use a different word besides "said"? But you don't want to get too creative because then you sound pompous and pretentious.
Yes, it can be overdone. Yeah.
Right. So even that, like the way people use dialogue tags, is like a really kind of subtle way of like gauging their writing ability. Is like, how subtle are you with how you use your dialogue tags? Because you can go a little too far in either direction,
is a fine line. It is a fine line, Jesse. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Mm. And again, that's part of the... And the only way as writers we learn that is just by trial and error. You just keep at it, you know?
I absolutely hate to do this, but we are out of time for our first segment. I've had so much fun with you, Jesse. You have to promise to come back soon.
I will come back soon. Maybe we could do it earlier, possibly. I don't know, because this is like 3 hours past my bedtime.
We can always pre-record earlier in the day with you next time. Just let Xtina know we can make that happen.
Definitely.
Okay,
speaking of
being shameless, so let me just like shamelessly plug, like, everybody buy Skinner. You can get it on Amazon, but it's best to get it through my publisher's website, The Encyclopocalypse. It's buyhorrorbooks.com. Get it there. And what else? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever the hell it is now. I'm starting up a Patreon page so people can just give me money. I'm online, look me up, friend me, follow me, buy my books, give me lots of money.
Subtlety.
You know what, I'm done with subtlety. Just send me some money, people, for fuck's sake, you know.
Thank you
so much,
Jesse. I cannot wait to have you back. It's been awesome.
Thanks a lot.
Seriously, thank you guys. Have a good one.
Hey, have a great rest of your day. Good night. Bye bye. I like the Bob Geldof approach. Just it gives you fucking money, and I am still trying to crack the art of clients sending me money and not actually expecting me to do anything. That'll be great.
So far
that's not really worked out, but I'll keep plugging away. You never know. But in the meantime, it is time for break. We will be back after these messages with, I'm guessing, the lovely Samantha's joining us this evening. So favorite part, don't tell it, favorite part of my show. So we will be right back.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Let me go. Beelzebub has the devil put aside for me. Welcome back to part two of the new Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
We're back. Woo. Are you back? I love that song. One of the all-time favorites of all time. What a great song. And I remember it rather frighteningly when it very, very first came out.
That was a long time ago.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I know.
You know, I love that I can't say I love this, but it is pretty funny that the hubby is in it. 51. So I have to, you know,
is what he is.
Well, the fun part is that I can say, you know, my husband's in his 50s and I'm only in my 40s. So that's been a lot of fun for me. And I don't know if you know, I'm sure, how many years I have left to claim that.
Not many.
Yeah, this is my last one.
Well, do you know, it's funny, just sort of back end of last week, my daughter said, so how is your sixth decade treating you so far? And I said, and how is being written out of my will fucking treating you so far?
Exactly.
You know, how dare you? Thanks for that. That's really it was going all right up until that point. She's adorable, but it's a sobering thought. It really is that. Yeah. So when you say he's 51, I mean he's literally a spring chicken. He really is. Bless him.
But it has been fun for me to say, you know, my husband's in his 50s and I'm just in my 40s. So he's so
much older. Yeah. Until what, August is it this year? Is it August your birthday?
July.
I was
you're
close.
Yeah.
Mm. So seriously, make the most of being in your 40s. But then you can be 40-10.
Yes. You know what? I think I might do that. Yeah. You know, it would confuse some people, so I should do that.
It would confuse most of America that they would just. It couldn't work that out.
Yeah.
Like, it'll confuse all the people when I say I'm from England and they say, what, is that in London? It will confuse those people.
Oh, gosh.
But anyway, speaking of confusion, yeah, it doesn't work, the segue doesn't, because there's nothing confusing about the wonderful Samantha. So I think we're going to play a little jingle and we'll bring her on, I think.
And now, it's time for another book review.
Yay! It's the lovely Samantha!
Hey, guys!
It has been forever, I think, since we've talked to you, so I'm so excited.
It has.
Several weeks.
You probably had another two or three children since we last spoke.
Absolutely not. No.
No. No, never again.
She said something really just so funny to me earlier today about kids and, you know, when do you get to the point where you enjoy them? And I think I said, people enjoy them? It was just, you know.
Yes, we're not having a good time, no.
Yeah, I haven't hit that stage yet, and mine are grown, so good luck. Yeah. That's why I was telling Jesse, is, you know, his little baby is 7 months, and that is a beautiful age because they can't talk, they can't run away from you, they can't get into a whole bunch of trouble. It's an amazing age. So
it really is.
Yeah. And then I don't know what happens, but yes, I'm so happy.
It just goes all horribly, horribly wrong. That's what happens.
So what do you have for us this evening, Samantha?
So I recently read The Bedmakers by Chad Lutsky and John Bowden, and you guys really need to read this one. It made me cry. Like, I ugly cried on my bed and then had to go wipe my face off to try to do the review for it.
Wow. I mean, Chad Letzke did write
the Foster Homes
that
and Flies.
Too.
That actually made
oh,
me.
That
I told him off about that. That actually seriously made me fucking cry, that book. That was just, he's very good at making grown men cry, Chad, which is a rare talent. But yeah, he did. Foster, if you like Chad's stuff, read Foster Homes and Flies. I guarantee if this one made you cry, that one, seriously, it will. It will break your heart.
I've read that one. It is very, very
grim. Oh, you have? Isn't
very grim,
Isn't it beautifully written, though?
I think so.
The Bedmakers or...
No, for Foster Homes and Flies. I haven't read Bedmakers. I will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, yeah. I thought so. I loved it. Wallflower is my favorite by him. But all of
was
his
that
stuff
the,
is good. And
was that, the, that was the drug addict one, wasn't it, Wallflower? Was that
Wallflower,
one?
Wallflower,
the one about the drug addict? Because that was, again,
yes,
that was incredibly good, yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
so
no, the Bedmakers is... This one's hard to explain. Like, you kind of have to just go in blind. But the basic premise is you have two friends, Jeannie and Calvin, and they're, like, older. They pick up one day, and they just leave, and they're going to go on their last adventure together. And they hop a train, and they're just going to let it take them where it takes them. And, like, when they get on the train, it sets things in motion, and, like, that's really where the story begins. So to say anything more about it, we'll spoil it. But it's, like, it's about friendship. It's a very pure friendship. And once you realize how the title ties into the story, it'll just make you cry. It makes you cry so hard.
Oh
man. You know, I've actually been in – I do love a good tearjerker. I really, really do. So I'm going to have to pick this up. So would you? Would this be a 5-star for you?
Yeah. So far, it's sitting as my number one. So we'll see if it's still my number one at the end of the year.
That is awesome. Yeah, it's early in the year, and you have a right on the top of your list. That's great. So again, real quick, just tell us who it's by and what the name of the book is.
It's The Bedmakers by Chad Letzke and John Bowden.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to have to pick that up. And, I hate to say goodbye to you, Sam. We just got you. But we will see you again next week. So thank you so much.
Yes, I will talk to you guys then. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye, Sam. Bye-bye. So what do you mean you're going to get? What are you going to do? You're going to invite Chad on the show and then
beg
for
a
free
coffee.
I know.
Yes,
I know how you work. I've got your number, lady.
Yeah, I, you know what? I'm putting a message in right now as we speak.
I figured you would. Okay, so.
Yes.
What happens now? I have no idea. I'm just pressing buttons randomly here. I have no idea what's going on, as usual.
Yes, I'm excited. We have new blood right now, so that's always very exciting. We have 4-time Splatterpunk Award-winning author Ryan Harding.
Hello.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for having me on.
Definitely. I've heard amazing things about you. So you can thank Sam for that.
May have misled you. But.
Nah. So where are you calling from tonight, Ryan?
I'm in East Tennessee.
No way. No way. What part of Tennessee? What part of Tennessee are you in? If you don't want to say.
Like, outside the Knoxville area.
I'm up in Bristol, so we're almost neighbors there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my favorite place in the world, I think, is Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg, absolute favorite place in the world, and we try to get there every couple of months, and we are due to get there because it's been a couple of months now, so I'm jonesing to get back there. I just love the mountains, so, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's a lot of great scenery, although you may feel not so good about our proximity after I do my reading, but...
Oh, goodness. Or that might make me just want to go there even more. Who knows? I am a horror fan, so. Yeah. So you are here to talk to us tonight about your book, transcendental. You know what? I knew this word was going to trip me up because I don't think that I speak it very often. So, you know, why don't you tell us the name, the title of your book?
Okay. It is a collection entitled Transcendental Mutilation.
Oh, I like it.
It is. Yeah, it is a collection of 10 short stories I've done since my first book came out through Dead Eyed entitled Genital Grinder.
Wow. Uh-huh. He's laughing. Yeah. Those are great titles, though. They are very much, you know, when you're scrolling Amazon or what have you, it's, you know, if you see that title, you're going to pause just to, what the heck is that? So, I do love the tagline, every journey begins with a single slice. I mean, I'm hoping that it's like a slice of pie because I absolutely love pie, but it's probably not.
It's not. Maybe if I do another volume, but not in this one.
So the story that you're reading takes place in, it's in Tennessee as well. You're going to ruin my favorite place, are you?
No, I tend to be pretty nebulous about the locations. I like people to be able to just imagine everything is pretty close to where they live.
Well, that makes it even more eerie, though.
Yeah.
You know, if the story takes place in Alaska, I'm like, well, I'm far from Alaska, so I'm good. So tell
I like being able to just create my own place, and it can act however I need it to.
Yeah, I understand that. So, I am anxious to get to the reading. You have an excerpt that you're going to read for us?
I do. Okay, I'm actually going to be reading a little excerpt from two stories. The first one is from a Splatterpunk award-winning story called Angel Bait.
Awesome. Okay. Do you need to set it up at all or just go into it?
No, I'm ready. I have it on my laptop, so right. I'm ready if you're ready.
Yep, it's all yours.
Okay. 4 days may have passed, maybe only minutes. It amounted to the same in the void. At one point, Otis brought buckets down for all of them as a sanitation system, but gave them no water, no food. It couldn't have been more than 3 days. The human body couldn't survive much longer without water, but it seemed like it. He also gave them no indication how they factored into his plan, presenting himself as only formidable and unknowable. No overtures toward rape, though, thankfully. Simon expanded his repertoire from wheezes, whistles, and bubbles to slurping and sucking. It went a long way to dispelling the worst of Tilda's hunger, but the torture of thirst remained. The dryness of their throats leveled off the conversations of hope, despair, and strategy, then more despair. They were grimly contemplating drinking from their waste buckets when Otis returned. Tilda's hope seesawed when she saw him carrying a bowl. Only one? And why the surgical gloves? It might surprise you that there's still leprosy, but would you believe there are actual leper colonies too? Otis paused and knelt by Simon. I got him from one. No one really makes a fuss, as you can imagine. It's not like stealing towels from a hotel. He examined the wounds. No, within striking distance, Simon made no move. He could do little more than dribble on someone in his wretched state. But maybe Otis would be so careless with one of his alleged saints who wouldn't hesitate to choke him out with their chains. I went to that island to hunt. It was the first time I didn't enjoy it. The first 8 or 9 times I hunted people, it was pretty intense. But then it wasn't. If I didn't lose, it was just the same thing as before. I needed something else. Hey, Michael said. What are you doing to Simon? They could all see what. Maybe a better question would be why, though no answer Otis gave them could possibly satisfy them. He continued as if Michael didn't say anything. The lepers gave me this idea in a roundabout way is the funny thing. I did some research because of that colony and learned some fascinating things. Otis pinched a sore on Simon's arm. The pustule burst and milky white fluid dribbled into the bowl he held at the ready. It got me thinking about the role of debasement in sainthood. Do you ever think about how everyone does the same religious rites now? The same ceremonies and lines like Shakespeare plays with different actors. maybe we don't see the same miracles now because of that. Everything sanitized and rote, pageantry without meaning. Even leprosy is treatable these days, though I guess wherever Simon came from, they didn't take his HMO. He probably panhandled until they shipped him off to the island so they didn't have to look at him. I guess beggars can be oozers. He repeated the process again and again through the monologue, found a pregnant ulcer or boil, squeezed it, drained it in the bowl, alarmingly copious amounts. Simon sat patiently as Otis used him as a human pus nozzle. I think we have enough. Otis stood up and carried the bowl toward Tilda, careful not to slop any contents over the rim. In the 13th century, Angela Foligno drank the bathwater of lepers. She compared eating one of their scabs to receiving the Holy Sacrament. Looks like we have a couple of those in Simon's offering today, Tilda. You'll have dibs. She burrowed against the wall, but the bowl hovered closer to her face. She gagged at the pungency of the concoction. Through the film of her tears, she saw those scabs buoyant in a custard of pus. She longed to slap the bowl away, but he purposely bolted their shackles where they couldn't lift them high enough to interfere. Velociraptor arms for all. I'll give you water only if you drink it. You get nothing if you don't. Tilda turned her head away. She'd rather die of thirst than play a sick game. She meant to stick with the plan, too, but Otis pinched her nose shut. She shrieked at the thought that the gloved fingers which had just milked a leper dry were touching her bare skin. Ever ready with the bowl, Otis set it to her lip and tilted it. The rancid sauce of Simon's boil spilled over her tongue like the milk from a cereal bowl. She closed her eyes for sanity's sake and wondered if she should look to be sure she didn't accidentally ingest a scabrous wafer of this abominable communion. The taste fulfilled her prophecies of disgust. It was no holy sacrament, this curdled brew of excreted sludge. She would have spat it out, but Otis kept her nose clamped and tilted her head backward to encourage her to swallow. Her pinched nostrils did not alleviate the taste. The putrescence coalesced into a bolus of leper effluvium that slid down her throat in slow inches. Tilda expected to vomit all of it the second she opened her mouth, but it seemingly sealed the passage on its way down. Simon's living rot slopped through her digestive tract as she sat there dry heaving. Otis stood again, checking the bowl. And blessed be ye, Tilda. You got at least one of those scabs. If you want the other, Michael, you better drink deep. And the other story.
I have to concentrate really hard to not get nauseous. So, yeah. Thank you for that. All right, go ahead.
All right. This is the beginning of a story called Last Time at Thanksgiving. You want me to tell you the creepiest Thanksgiving story I ever heard? Kendall said. I didn't, not at all, but he launched into it anyway before I got the chance to object. Someone I went to school with, his cousin knew a guy who came home for Thanksgiving with his girlfriend, right? Well, the guy's sister brought her boyfriend, too. It's a fine Christian home, so everyone gets their own room. Middle of the night, guy's like, I'm going to get my dick wet, you know? Kendall. So he tiptoes into the room beside his. Girl whispers something about how kinky it is doing it in the parents' home, and he goes off in her like a stick of dynamite and limps back to his room exhausted, best nut of his life. Gets in his bed, and not 2 minutes later, the door opens, and his girl slides into bed with him, talking about, hey, I thought you were going to wake me up with a bang in the night. Oh, my God. Creepy, right? I told you. Okay, now flash forward 9 months later. Kendall. Seriously, this is the best part. Across the table from me, my mom's mouth curled with extreme dissatisfaction. I knew that look well. Maybe this isn't the right time for this sort of talk with you and your friend. My grandfather seemed lost to all of this, as he had since we moved him to hamster river-assisted living, mechanical chewing with a steely expression seemingly his only proper function. On the other end of the spectrum, my sister had forgotten how to chew, staring at my roommate like something in a jar of formaldehyde at the freak show. She seemed both younger than a high school sophomore and far older in her practiced disdain. Kendall shrugged. Okay, yeah, I'll tell you about it later, man. Much later, my dad recommended. His face looked roughly the same color as the cranberry sauce on his plate. I almost didn't make it home for Thanksgiving, and now I wondered if that would have been such a bad thing. Okay, that's all.
I had to find my mute button, so I took me a couple seconds there. That was really good, and I have to wonder, because we've talked to you a little bit here, and you just seem so nice and well-adjusted and just some of the descriptions you've used in the first excerpt, I was like, oh my gosh. And I have to admit, I was trying really hard. I'm like, no, don't even think about it. Don't think about it. I have a tiny little bit of weak stomach there. That was just intense. And I guess my biggest question is, where do you come up with these things? So what is your inspiration?
Well, Angel Bates came from like real life. I mean, that thing he said about the scabs of the lepers and all that, somebody really did that. It was something I read on an internet article one day, and it just disgusted me so much. I was like, yeah, I'll have to use that someday. So that story in particular, that was probably one of the roughest ones I've written. Mostly they don't affect me that much. I'm just worried about trying to describe them the best I can. But that one in particular, I mean, even when I was reading it, trying to practice for this, it was like, yeah, this is pretty rough.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, being a writer as well, I know that we do put bits and pieces of, you know, real stuff in our writing. So it is kind of something that I do is try to pick out. I wonder where that came from. I wonder if that's real. I wonder, and you know what, I have to say no part of that beginning, that first story did I think could have been real. But thank you for that.
Oh, no, I mean, there's other stuff mentioned in the story that's even worse than that. So, it's crazy.
Yeah, but so descriptive. You did that really well. And I have to say, great voice, too. You know, you could narrate your own audiobook there. I think you did a really good job.
Well, thank you. That's one of my better readings, although I stumbled because the cat jumped on the keyboard at one point. That's okay.
No, that was great. And when you're making out the signed copy, that's XTINA. So, what are you working on now?
Well, I owe a short story to K. Trapp Jones's Southern Horror Anthology, for one, and I'm trying to finish a collaboration that I've been doing with Brian Smith for quite a few years now. I've been threatening to finally finish it, and I think this will finally be the year. We are in the home stretch of it, so it can be done if I just take the time to do it, and hopefully we will have it available before the end of this year somewhere.
I know all about waiting for a book to be done. James Longmore. He has one I've been waiting on for about 3-4 years now, I think.
No, it's more like 8 years now.
Yeah. But it's getting close.
I've been busy.
I know. It's got to be getting close, though, right?
One would hope. One would hope so. I'm just making excuses. I'm really sorry. I promise to do better.
Oh, I forgive you. I love to ask our guests. It's one of my favorite questions here. What is your favorite Stephen King novel, if you have one?
Well, it's kind of hard to beat The Stand. I like that one a lot. I like 11/22/63 a lot. I've read Pet Cemetery several times. I love a lot of the Bachman books, like Rage and The Long Walk. I've read those several times, probably more than any other book, really.
Good collection. I still always stick with The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. It was short, but sweet. Definitely didn't cram a whole lot of, it's funny because even if he did cram all sorts of crap in it, it would still be amazing and we would still all read it. But it does seem like that's more of a bare bones book and no extras or all. But I just thought it was a great story. I absolutely loved it. So that's always my answer there.
Cool. I've read all of his except I still need to read Under the Dome and the newest one.
Yeah, Under the Dome was great. I think all except for probably, the end, which I
yeah, Under the Dome was good. The ending was awful, but the book was good.
I
enjoyed that one. Yeah,
he it's like, you know, he has amazing stories, and you get to the end, and I think he was just like, yeah, I'm tired of this now. I've been writing this book for, you know, thousands
of
pages
now. It was another, whatever, 500-600 pages, you know, and it was like, just like, let's just end it like this. And it was going, it was more of a, you know, as a character study, it worked very well. It was incredible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
And I've often said about King, you know. So I mean, it was the same. You could take out the supernatural element, and it would still be a damn good book.
Yes, definitely. But
For me, I mean, seeing as though you didn't bother to ask me, I mean, for me, I think Salem's Lot. And I read Salem. It was the second, I think, on the second Stephen King book I read.
Right.
And it's still my focus. They remade it actually again. That's going to be coming out soon. But
wow.
The book itself is incredible.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah,
good.
I may have to read that one again soon.
Yeah, it's been a while for me as well.
Yeah, I may put that one on in October on audio, maybe.
Uh huh.
Oh, I absolutely hate to do this. This was our first show back after we've been gone for like, I don't know, a month and a half. So we're a little rusty tonight, and we run out of time. And this has been such a great show tonight. Ryan, you have to promise to come back and see us.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you all having me on the show.
Definitely. We've had so much fun. And before we let you go, tell us real quick where we can find you online.
Okay, I'm on Twitter or X. My handle is @NecroAF, and my Facebook is, I think, facebook.com/RyanHardMorbid, all one word.
Nice. All righty, and for all of our listeners out there, go out and find, I was going to hand you the mic to say the title of the book because I stumble on it. You know, and I practiced, but I still stumbled. So tell us real quick what the book's title was.
It is Transcendental Mutilation.
Yeah, so everybody go out and find that book by Ryan Harding. And thank you so much for being on the show, and I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you guys
Ryan.
So much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Time has beaten us yet again. It is, and it's bedtime for me, which is fantastic. I'm well past my bedtime, but and I did promise her we would have our loyal listener Janina who tunes in. God bless her. I've chosen the closing song for her, so it's the time of the night when we say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
Don't wish it away, don't look at it like it's forever. Between you and me, I could honestly say the things can only get better.